Greetings, this is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia, and this is another in this occasional series of readings from and brief notes and commentary upon Eusebius of Caesarea's The Ecclesiastical History. Here is Book 5, chapters 14 through 17. Chapter 14. The enemy of the Church of God, who hates good and loves deeply all that is wicked, left untried no kind of plot against men, and again strove to raise up strange heresies against the Church. Of these, some, like poisonous reptiles, crawled over Asia and Phrygia, and boasted that Montanus was the Paraclete, and that the women of his sect, Priscilla and Maximilla, were the prophetesses of Montanus. Chapter 15. Others flourished in Rome, of which Florinus was the leader. He had been turned out of the presbytery of the church, and with him was Blastus, who had suffered a similar fall. These drew away more of the church and brought them to their own opinion, each trying to introduce innovations about the truth in his own way. Chapter 16. Against the so-called Cataphrygian heresy, the power which champions the truth raised up a powerful and invincible weapon at Hierapolis in Apollinarius, who has already been mentioned in this work, and with him many others of the learned men of that time, from whom abundant material for history has been left to us. One of these, at the beginning of his treatise against the Montanus, indicates that he had also taken part in oral controversy against them. He writes a preface in this way: "For a long and protracted time, my dear Abercius Marcellus, I have been urged by you to compose a treatise against the sect of those called after Miltiades, but until now I was somewhat reluctant, not from any lack of ability to refute the lie and testify to the truth, but from timidity and scruples, lest I might seem to some to be adding to the writings or injunctions of the word of the new covenant of the gospel, to which no one who has chosen to live according to the gospel itself can add, and from which he cannot take away. But when I just come to Ancyra in Galatia, and perceived that the church in that place was torn in two by this new movement, which is not, as they call it, prophecy, but rather, as will be shown, false prophecy, I disputed concerning these people themselves and their propositions as far as I could with the Lord's help, for many days continuously in the church. Thus the church rejoiced and was strengthened in the truth, but our opponents were crushed for the moment, and our adversaries were distressed. Therefore, the presbyters of the place asked me to leave some note of what had been said against the proponents of the word of truth, when Zodocus of Atrus, our fellow presbyter, was also present. Though we did not do so, we promised to write from home if the Lord permitted, and to send it to them speedily." Continuing with other similar remarks at the beginning of his treatise, he proceeds to narrate as follows the cause of the heresy referred to. Their opposition and their recent heretical schism from the church had the following origin. In Phrygian Mysia, there is said to be a village called Ardabav. There, they say, that a recent convert called Montanus, when Gratus was proconsul of Asia, in the unbounded lust of his soul for leadership, gave access to himself to the adversary, became obsessed, and suddenly fell into frenzy and convulsions. He began to be ecstatic and to speak and to talk strangely, prophesying concerning, contrary rather to the custom which belonged to the tradition and succession of the church from the beginning. Of those who at that time heard these bastard utterances, some were vexed, thinking that he was possessed by a devil and by a spirit of error, and was disturbing the populace. They rebuked him and forbade him to speak, remembering the distinction made by the Lord and his warning to keep watchful guard against the coming of the false prophets. But others, as though elevated by a holy spirit and a prophetic gift and not a little conceited, forgot the Lord's distinction, and encourage the mind-injuring and seducing and people-misleading spirit, being cheated and deceived by it, so that he could not be kept silent. But by some art, or rather by such an evil scheme of artifice, the devil wrought destruction for the disobedient, and receiving unworthy honors from them, stimulated and inflamed their understanding, which was already dead to the true faith, so that he raised up two more women and filled them with the bastard spirit, so that they spoke madly and improperly and strangely, like Montanus. The Spirit gave blessings to those who rejoiced and were proud in him, and puffed them up by the greatness of its promises. Yet sometimes it flatly condemned them completely, wisely, and faithfully, that it might seem to be critical, though but few of the Phrygians were deceived. But when the arrogant spirit taught to blaspheme the whole Catholic Church throughout the world, because the spirit of false prophecy received from it neither honor nor entrance, for the Christians of Asia, after assembling for this purpose many times and in many parts of the province, tested the recent utterances, pronounced them profane, and rejected the heresy. Then, at last, the Montanists were driven out of the church and excommunicated. He tells this story at the beginning, and throughout the book continues the refutation of the error. But in the second book, he speaks as follows about the end of the persons referred to. Since then, they called us murderers of the prophets, because we did not receive their chattering prophets, for they say that these are those whom the Lord promised to send to the people. Let them then answer us before God. Is there anyone, good people, of those whose talking began with Montanus and the women, who was persecuted by the Jews or killed by the wicked? Not one. Or was there any one of them who was taken and crucified for the name? No, there was not. Or was any of the women ever scourged in the synagogue of the Jews or stoned? Never anywhere. It was a different death that Montanus and Maximilla are said to have died. For the story goes that each of them was inspired by a mind-destroying spirit to commit suicide, though not together, and there was much gossip at the time of the death of each. But thus it was that they died and destroyed their lives like the traitor Judas. So also general report says that a certain Theodotus, that remarkable man, the first steward, as it were, of their alleged prophecy, was sometimes taken up and raised to heaven when he fell into a trance and trusted himself to the spirit of deceit, but was hurled down and died miserably. They say at least that this happened thus. But not having seen them ourselves, we do not claim to have any knowledge of such things, my friend. For perhaps Montanus and Theodotus and the above-mentioned woman died in this way, but perhaps they did not. Again, in the same book, he says that the sacred bishops of that time tried to refute the spirit that was in Maximilla, but were prevented by others who plainly cooperated with the spirit. And he writes thus, "And let not the spirit which speaks through Maximilla say in the same work, according to Asterius Urbanus, I am driven away like a wolf from the sheep. I am not a wolf. I am word and spirit and power. But let him show clearly and prove the power in the spirit, and let him through the spirit force to recognize him those who were then present for the purpose of testing and conversing with the spirit as it spoke, eminent men and bishops, Zodicus from the village Cumanae, and Julian from Apamea, whose mouths the party of Themiso muzzled, and did not allow the false spirit which deceived the people to be refuted by them." In the same book, again, after other refutations of the false prophecies of Maximilla, in a single passage he both indicates the time at which he wrote this and quotes her predictions, in which she foretold future wars and revolutions, and he corrects the falsehoods of them as follows. Has it not been made obvious already that this is another lie? For it is more than 13 years today since the woman died, and there has been in the world neither local nor universal war, but rather, by the mercy of God, continuing peace, even for Christians. This is from the second book. And from the third, I will also quote a few words in which he speaks as follows against those who boasted that they had more martyrs. So when they had been refuted in the whole discussion, and have nothing to reply, they try to take refuge in martyrs, saying that they have many martyrs, and this is a trustworthy proof of the power of the alleged prophetic spirit among them. But this appears to be actually further from the truth than anything, for some of the other heresies have innumerable martyrs, but I do not suppose that we shall accept them for that reason, nor admit that they have the truth. In the first place, indeed, the so-called Marcionites of the heresy of Marcion say that they have innumerable martyrs to Christ, but nevertheless, Christ himself they do not confess according to truth. And after a little he goes on as follows, "Wherefore, whenever members of the church have been called to martyrdom for the true faith, meet any of the so-called martyrs of the Montanus heresy, they separate from them and die without communicating with them, because they refuse to agree with the spirit in Montanus and the women. And that this is true, and that it happened in our time in Apamea on the Meander, is shown by the ease of those who were martyred with Gaius and Alexander of Eumenia." Chapter 17. And in this work, he also quotes Miltiades as a writer who had also himself written a treatise against the heresy mentioned. After quoting some of their sayings, he continues as follows, "I have given this abstract of what I found in a work of theirs when they were attacking the work of Alcibiades, the Christian, in which he shows that a prophet need not to speak in ecstasy. And he goes on in the same work to give a catalogue of those who had been prophets of the New Testament, and among them he numbers a certain Ammia and Quadratus, and says thus, "But the false prophets speak in ecstasy, after which follow ease and freedom from fear. He begins with voluntary ignorance, but turns to involuntary madness of soul, as has been said before. But they cannot show that any prophet, either of those in the Old Testament or those in the New, were inspired in this way. They can boast neither of Agabus, nor of Judas, nor of Silas, nor of the daughters of Philip, nor of Ammia, or in rather Philadelphia, nor of Quadratus, nor of any other who do not belong to them." And again, after a little, he goes on, "For if the Montanus women succeeded to Quadratus and Ammia in Philadelphia in the prophetic gift, let them show who among them succeeded the followers of Montanus and the women. For the apostle grants that the prophetic spirit shall be in all the church until the final coming. But this they could not show, seeing that this is already the 14th year from the death of Maximilla." He therefore so writes, "But the Miltiades mentioned by him has also left us other monuments of his own zeal for the oracles of God in the treatises which he composed against the Gentiles and against the Jews, treating each subject separately in two treatises. And besides this, he wrote an apology to the secular rulers on behalf of the philosophy which he held." This ends Book 5 and Chapters 14 through 17. And we'll move on to some notes and commentary. These chapters survey the Montanist or the Phrygian or the Cataphrygian heresy. Chapter 14 introduces this Montanist heresy, which Eusebius says, like poisonous reptiles, crawled over Asia and Phrygia. Its leader, Montanus, was called the Paraclete or the Comforter of the Holy Spirit, as the term is used in the Gospel of John. And two women of the sect, Priscilla and Maximilla, were considered to be his prophetesses. Chapter 15 notes two other heterodox men who had been turned out of the church at Rome, Florinus and Blastus. Chapter 16 describes Apollinarius of Hierapolis as a powerful and invincible weapon against Montanism, and there's mention also made of other learned men who opposed this heresy. Eusebius cites several passages from a work by one of these men addressed to a certain Abercius Marcellus. The Montanists are called the sect of Miltiades, one of their early teachers. The writer expresses his hesitancy to write since he did not want to add to or take away from the gospel, presumably the canonical scriptures. What the Montanists claimed to be were prophets and to be having a ministry of prophecy, but the author of this work calls this a false prophecy. He says the movement began in the village of Ardabav in Phrygian Mysia, where Montanus had been a Christian convert, led astray by his unbounded lust for leadership control. He had ecstatic experiences, spoke strangely, and prophesied contrary to church tradition. Some assumed he was led by the devil or a spirit of error. There were two women who were then raised up, and they possessed the same bastard spirit and spoke madly, improperly, and strangely like Montanus. When this arrogant spirit blasphemed the universal or Catholic Church, the Montanus were driven out and excommunicated. The author reports the miserable end of these so-called prophets, relaying a tradition that Montanus and Maximilla, like Judas, committed suicide. Another Montanus teacher named Theodotus is also said to have come to a miserable end. Eusebius also reports that faithful bishops attempted to refute Maximilla while she lived, but the Orthodox men were muzzled by the Montanus. He also cites prophecies made by Maximilla about the end of the world, but after 13 years after her death, these were proven false. Finally, he cites a report that the Montanus, like the followers of Marcion, claimed to have martyrs, as did the Orthodox. The martyrs of the true faith, like Gaius and Alexander of Eumenia, however, separated themselves from those in these sects, and so they did not want even to die with them. Chapter 17 continues this survey of anti-Montanus work, and it makes reference to a writing against the Montanus by someone named Miltiades. It's kind of confusing because he seems to share a name with the person who is credited with being one of the founders of the Montanus movement, but he reports that the Montanus were opposing the Orthodox teacher Alcibiades. The Christians pointed to the prophets of the Old Testament and those with prophetic gifts in the New Testament, like Agabus, Judas, Silas, and the daughters of Philip, as well as early Christian prophets like Ammia and Quadratus. And they contrast them with the way that the Montanus exercised their supposedly prophetic ministry. It's noted that the Montanus prophets were not succeeded by others when they passed, notably Montanus and the two women, Priscilla and Maximilla. Finally, other writings of this person named Miltiades are mentioned, including works against Gentiles and against Jews, and an apology that he wrote to the secular rulers. In conclusion, these chapters are important for understanding the Montanus or Phrygian or Cataphrygian heresy, which was something like a charismatic sect relying on ecstatic experiences and utterances. The Romans, in their persecutions of early Christians, apparently lumped those of this sect in among the Orthodox Christians. But according to Eusebius, the Orthodox martyrs were the only ones who were really authentic, while the martyrs of other sects, like the Marcionites and the Montanus, were not authentic. And once again, we see that there are Orthodox writers who rise up to oppose heresy, and there were those who rose up to oppose the Montanus. Well, this brings this episode to an end. Hope this has been helpful and edifying, and we will look forward to speaking to you in the next episode. Till then, take care and God bless.